Production. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Take a look and see what just breezed in the door.
Why, I didn't know the circus was in town.
Must have got that shirt off on a dead Chinese.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Yes, indeed, we will be talking Twilight Zone. Hello, folks. My name is Lynn, and as always, I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And once again, I'm always thrilled to be here with my wonderful co-hosts, Bobby and Robert. And unfortunately, Dave is not here, but we do have one of our most loyal followers.
He must be on the open trail somewhere. Who knows?
Yeah.
Probably doing some little raw hiding there, bring the cattle in. Who knows?
He might be, but luckily we do have one of our most loyal followers with us, Rick Wall. So we'll be happy to get Rick wrangling in the cattle to give his opinion. Yeah.
Well, we just want to welcome everybody, mosey on into the Talking Twilight Zone show here. Sit down, take your boots off, and rest in that cattle drive that you took.
And taking Dave's place, we have the wonderfully, an unbelievably wonderful Rick Wall, who we're always thrilled to have here. So, let's just say that this episode is called...
Needs help.
Yeah, it needs help. It's called The Showdown with Rance McGrew. Okay, now... A totally bumbling, egotistical, and cowardly, might I add cowardly, TV Cowboy star, he's a star, remember that, star, named Rance McGrew.
Now, poor Lynn, she wanting to get through this quick that she don't want to hear what Rod has to say about the opening clip.
Oh, you're right. Oh, can we have an opening clip?
She always hogs every show.
Yeah, I don't know.
Why, sure. And we got a little treat at the beginning of the clip, so here we go.
Do it.
Marty, I gave you explicit instructions not to come here, but to go directly back to 1985.
I know, Doc. I had to come.
But it's good to see you, Marty. Marty, you're going to have to do something about those clothes. You walk around town dressed like that, you're liable to get shot.
Or hanged.
What idiot dressed you in that outfit?
You did.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Years ago, a motley collection of tough mustaches galloped across the West and left behind a raft of legends and legerdemains. And it seems a reasonable conjecture that if there are any television sets up in cowboy heaven, and any one of these rough and woolly nail eaters could see with what careless abandon their names and exploits are being bandied about, they're very likely turning over in their graves, or worse, getting out of them. Which gives you a clue as to the proceedings that'll begin in just a moment when one Mr. Rance McGrew, a $3,000 a week phony baloney, discovers that this week's current edition of Make Believe is being shot on location. And that location is the Twilight Zone.
Now we'll move on back over to the bar and have Lynn take care of you. Go ahead, Lynn.
Ba-ba-ba-ba. I always like that. Ba-ba-ba-ba. Yeah, and see, now I did forget to have you do the opening clip, and I didn't have any beer before the show. So, see, I'm
bad.
Better with the...
And I even put on there, and it knocks the edge off for you.
This is the kind of episode you want to bring before you
see. Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
You know how people, when they sit and drink and they say how pretty that woman looks at the end of the bar? It'd probably make this story look better if they had a few drinks.
All the women look better at closing time, yeah. Okay. Okay, well, anyway, this Rance McGrew, he's a totally bumbling, egotistical, and cowardly TV cowboy star. Okay, and he's ready to shoot a scene. And it's a scene in which Jesse James is supposed to shoot him in the back. And all kinds of things go wrong due to Rance McGrew being a bumbling idiot. And suddenly, during one of the many scene takes, he suddenly finds himself in the real Old West, in a real Old West saloon. And the real Jesse James walks in and explains to him that he and Billy the Kid and the Dalton Boys and other famous outlaws are not pleased with the way they're portrayed in McGrew's show. So James then challenges McGrew. And McGrew has never shot a gun in his life, never rode a horse, never shot a gun, you know, nothing to do with cowboy actions at all. And he challenges McGrew to a showdown. McGrew, of course, attempts to run away, but James corners him. So McGrew drops to his knees, and he pleads for him to not shoot him, to just leave him alone. And so Jesse James says, you know, well, what are you, a coward, and what, you can't fight? And he says he'll do anything if James will only spare him. So Jesse James backs off. He shows some pity, and he says, well, we may be stiffs up there, but we're sensitive. So McGrew finds...
the stiff killers.
That's right. We're sensitive killers.
Oh, thank you for letting me rob your bank. just put the money in the bag and I won't shoot you. Thanks.
That's right. We're very sensitive. I mean, you know, we have flowers on our mantles, you know. But he says, you know, we're very sensitive. So then Rance McGrew finds himself back on the original set of his show, and suddenly somebody comes up to him and says, you know, your agent's waiting for you outside. And he says, what? An agent? What agent? And he goes out there, and the agent turns out to be Jesse James himself in all kinds of Hollywood garb. You know, he's wearing
and
a
beret. And what's that terrible Hawaiian shirt he's wearing?
Oh, and the loud sports shirt. Yeah, the Hawaiian shirt. Oh, my God.
He's an agent. What do you want?
Oh, God.
That's true.
He was touched by an angel. He was touched by an angel with a very bad fashion sense, because he arrived to make sure that all the outlaws get their just due, beginning with Jesse James throwing McGrew out of the saloon.
Oh,
with.
Man.
So you got to figure, well, this show isn't going to last very long because the star is going to get beat up all the time now. So where's the logic in that? I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. I honestly don't know why Rod allowed these lame attempts at humorous episodes to be aired. I mean, we're talking about one of the most brilliant, ingenious men to ever pen a sci-fi story. And yet he lets this kind of garbage grace the very TV series that made him an icon. I mean, the story was based on an idea by... Frederick Fox, and Rod took the idea, and this is what he did with it. So I kind of wish Freddie had kept this idea to himself, but I also wish that Rod wasn't so quick to run with these bad ideas. I mean, look, Rod was one of those people, he respected writers, and he respected almost all the writers who submitted things to him, and he believed in giving them a break. And that's obvious from some of the crap he's let go by. And I respect him for that, but this is pretty bad. And I think he needed to take a few steps back on this one and think a little bit harder. I mean, remember the episode from season one titled A World of Difference, which a movie actor's taken from his real world into a movie world and then back again?
Yeah, I hated that one too, yeah.
Oh, yes, yeah. It's like ho-hum, you know, the deja vu thing, been there, done that. These episodes are going to need to be too much at this point. And the only saving grace is that somehow he always manages to bring in some extraordinary episodes that keep us hanging on. And that is the brilliance of Rod Serling. He can throw out a couple of turkeys, as Rod used to call them. He called his duds turkeys. We call them duds. He called them turkeys. He throws them out there at us, And we say, well, yeah, but you got to have something better for us. And he always does. He always manages to keep us hanging in there. He has episodes such as Kick the Can, To Serve Man, The Little People, you know, and he keeps us hanging in. Because of those episodes, we stay dedicated to this man who somehow always managed to give us something great, even if we had to wade through a few clunkers to get to them. And as
well,
far
I kind of look at the Twilight Zone as digging for gold. It's pretty much you got the Twilight Zone, which is the canyon or cave. You go digging for gold. You
get a couple of coal.
Dig up some real nuggets, and some others you dig up some pyrite, which you know is fool's gold. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you get the coal and you get the diamonds.
Yeah.
Exactly. I agree
and
with
the
you.
Crap sometimes.
And the crap. Yeah, and the crap. and the old shoe that might have been buried underneath somewhere.
The one the dog likes to chew on. Yeah.
That's right. And Larry Blyden. I mean, Larry Blyden. I have nothing against the guy. I think he was a decent actor. I mean, he was no Clark Gable, or of course he was no Charlton Heston. Nobody's Charlton Heston. But I liked him much better in this season one episode, Nice Place to Visit.
Yeah, Nice Place to Visit, my favorite.
Yeah, I liked it better than that. You know, I liked him. This one, he
Rocky
was
Valentine. Yeah.
Yeah, Rocky Valentine, exactly. So, I mean, I really can't say much about this terrible episode. It does belong in the dumpster. It's just terrible. I'm sorry that Rod let it go through. But
the time travel element, you have to admit, Lynn, was pretty good.
Yeah.
At least
you
have a little time travel in it to justify something out of it.
Yeah, and that's about the only thing, though. You know, I mean, other than that, I mean, the episode really stunk. And sometimes I wonder if Rod did that on purpose. Let's throw a couple of turkeys in there, and they're going to sit there and say, what's this, is it going to get any better, and then throw in a good one like The Little People or To Serve Man. Oh there we are, and now we're back again to the good stuff, you know, and they get a couple of good ones and then a couple of, I don't know what Rod's mind was like. I wish I could have crawled inside of it once.
Or 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah, well, 4 o'clock. And again, that's like something, you know, making a statement. Well, of course you want to make a statement, but I don't know. I've just never really. I wish I could. If I was a little flea that could go into the mind of Rod Serling, I'd love to just see how it works, because there had to be a method to this man's madness. There had to be a method to his madness. But anyway. I give it a zero. I have to give it a zero because I think it really sucked. So I'm going to put it over to you, Robert.
Thank you, Lynn. I mean, you couldn't even nudge it up a little bit for time travel in this episode. Just couldn't.
What's that? What would you?
Couldn't just get it up there to a little bit, like a one or something. But no, I can't blame you. The story is terrible, to be honest about it. But.
No, I can't. I just can't. I wouldn't, under another circumstance, I would if it was different. But this is almost like Keystone Cops type of comedy. I don't know. It's like the Keystone Cops meets the Old West. I can't. I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't.
Well, it's this whole comedy aspect of the episode. It didn't help it very much. I agree with that. And one of the things I mentioned was it very much reminds me of a lesser appreciated episode called The Bard, which was episode 120, season 4.
And, is that 4? That's 4, right? That's an hour-long episode, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the 51-minute joy one coming ahead. Yeah.
Yikes. Check.
I'll be out of town on that one. I won't be commenting on it.
Okay, we'll have to fill in for you, Bobby.
We're moving to Philadelphia.
You know, as writers do, they get stand-ups. We'll get a stand-up for you there, Bobby.
Thank you.
So, yeah, you know, the whole thing, the bar is about Shakespeare, what he was called. Towards the end of the episode, they introduce figures from the past of what to be written. So I thought it would be kind of an interesting idea. I do have a clip for this episode, but I decided to save it for my review, and I'm going to run that and the clip of The Bard together, and you can see the comparisons where I feel that this episode, The Showdown of Rance McGrew, was actually a prequel to season 4, as Dave Stefani says, you know, two bites of the cherry, and
sure.
I believe this is what one of the things he was talking about.
Yeah, sure.
Howdy, Marshal.
Do love the horse, though.
You said anything, and anything is the following. I'm going to stick around from picture to picture to make sure you don't hurt no more feelings. Now, in this scene, Jesse don't shoot you in the back.
You don't?
He's lost a lot of blood. He's weak as teeth. But he can still get on his feet, knock you through that window, and make his getaway. That understood?
He knocked me, Rance McGrew, through a window? Which we, it's a...
Si?
Yeah?
Si, I have a great idea for something I think might be a fun shot. What? Are you out of your mind? Yes, he does. What? All right. All right. Scene 93, take two. Action.
Now, that was just fine. Now, about next week's episode. The one where you knocked the gun out of Billy the Kid's hand from a fourth-story window a half a block away with the base of a lamp.
Real good, huh?
States. The way I see it is this. Billy, he hears you, and he whirls around, and he fires from the hip, and he shoots the lamp right out of your hand. Now, in 2 weeks, I think we ought to give Sam Starr a break. He's a real nice fella. Awful good to his mother.
Yeah. American history, right?
Right.
And you want it documented like, right?
Documented, of course.
And you want it real authentic, right?
Authentic above all, dear.
Now, I'd like you to meet my staff. Send the gentleman in, would you? General Robert E. Lee. General Ulysses S. Grant. George Washington. Abraham Lincoln. Pocahontas. Daniel Boone. Theodore Roosevelt. Benjamin Franklin.
And thank goodness it ends right there. It got sillier and sillier that episode.
Oh, my God.
End.
It certainly did. It did.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
If they could have seen, and during that mention of the names, all these people are dressed in the, you know,
their proper
period.
Garb, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, oh, my goodness.
It's almost
like a bad episode.
No, Bill and Ted's
Excellent Adventure. Remember that, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Yeah.
It's almost a bad episode of that.
And also, if you and I'm sure you remember Bewitched. Remember Bewitched?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
With Elizabeth. And she used to conjure up all these people from the past. And at one point, she had Benjamin Franklin there, and she had George Washington, and she had. God knows who else. I mean,
Clara make this terrible mistake.
Terrible mistake, and all of a sudden you would have Benjamin Franklin, and he was all of a sudden he was downtown. He was walking around downtown, and people thought he was nuts. And you know, it's sort of like that. You know, it was almost like they copied it, not necessarily copied it, but they had the same basic idea. You know, conjure up somebody, and now you have to explain. Who they are, why they're dressed.
Let me throw my magical dust down and cast my few words over it, and all these people, Kalamazoo, will appear, you know.
Right. And then you have to explain to Darren's boss and everybody else that sees them, oh, this is my crazy uncle. I remember the one episode where she said, oh, this is my crazy uncle or, you know, my eccentric.
Uncle Arthur, I loved him. He was Paul Lynn, he was funny.
Paul Lynn was brilliant.
Yep.
Paul Lynn was, but yes, that's how she would explain these people. This is my eccentric uncle, you know, and that's how she explained these people away. But yeah, it's almost similar to that. It really is.
Yeah, and that's why I compared it to because it's like I said, this episode feels very much like a prequel to The Bard later on, and I mean the season 4 one. I mean this was only what about 22, 23 minutes. You're talking about 51 minutes of pure torture with
Picard.
Oh,
my God. Yes.
Boy, don't we look forward to watching that when we get to season four. Anyway.
Wait a minute. Was Burt Reynolds in that one?
No, he was. Remember?
Yeah, that
he
was
in that.
Yeah, he got
Shakespeare goes
something.
Up to him and talks to him and says, "Who are you?" "Oh, I'm the character in this piece." Yeah.
He punches him out. Yeah. That was Burt Reynolds in the Twilight Zone. You gotta love it. Yeah. So.
But also, I make a comparison. Oh, no problem. I make a comparison also to Back to the Future 3, where Marty's wearing that stupid cowboy Tom Mix outfit.
Yeah, yeah,
and that's
yeah.
the two clips
yeah.
I played at the beginning there, where he walks in, wears that ridiculous hat that his ancestor gave him. And,
yeah.
You know, you have the three original cowboys. You got the one that played in Green Acres. You know, tell you what I'm going to do for you, Mr. Douglas.
Mr. Haney.
Yeah, the guy that played Mr. Haney, he was
Mr.
the third
Haney.
Cowboy.
Pat Buttram. Yeah.
Yep. And they were all sitting around the table there saying, you know, did the circus walk in and all that. That was that one clip.
Exactly.
And then the other ones where, you know, Mad Dog Tanner almost kills Marty and Doc saves him. And he says, who put that ridiculous outfit on? And he goes, you did.
Robert. Do you go to Renaissance fairs and make fun of the people's outfits and stuff like that? Are you one of those kind of people?
I've never been interested in the Renaissance. I do love that Big Bang Theory one where they're all dressed in Renaissance outfit.
How about sci-fi conventions?
I used to go to MarCon for years. I used to dress as a Fourth Doctor sometimes.
Oh, okay.
Really? Oh, Nicky, that's cool. That is so
yeah,
cool.
I used to have the wig and the coat and
wow.
the scarf and all that. That was, yeah, that's fun.
And there's a big Renaissance fair that takes place in Pennsylvania every year. Rick, you probably know about it. The big Renaissance fair takes place in Pennsylvania every year. I believe it's, is it Cutts?
There's one in Ohio also.
Kutztown, yeah,
too.
Oh, big one. I can't remember the town now. I think it's Kutztown, but I can't be sure. But yeah, major Renaissance. I've never been to it, but I hear it's like if you're into that kind of stuff, that is the one to go to. Yeah.
But the whole thing is, Rick, would you want to go back to the 1800s dressed in that with sneakers because you can't get the boots on?
How to play no, that? But dressed like that, yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Lynn.
No, I was just gonna say you have to put sneakers on Daphne.
Well, it'd be comfortable in the boots. I couldn't blame
yeah,
you on that, but
yeah, soggy.
But it's the whole thing about this episode. How lazy can Rance be by not studying his roles? I mean, you know. A lot of these actors, they learn, you know, how to portray the actors by actually getting into, you know, what the character is, you know. You heard of actors preparing for a role. For one example, Christian
sure.
Bale. I'm Batman. You know, that's...
Yeah.
But also, he's done lesser ones. One was called The Machinist, which he knocked himself all the way down to, I think it was 100 pounds or 90 pounds,
yeah.
something like
yeah.
that, to portray a role. And, I mean, man, I don't know if you've seen it, but that is a creepy movie. And I remember watching it. But, you know, it's also kind of in the way of where, you know, you got the, I think, isn't that Christopher Nolan movie, Rick?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, because he comes out with another one later on, which runs along that same line of The Machinist, where the beginning is not the beginning, and the end's not the end. It's kind of mixed into where the end is the beginning, and the beginning's at, you know, in the middle or at the end. You know, one of those type movies where, you know, it's a Pulp Fiction type where
all
it's all
convoluted.
Mixed.
Yeah, kind of convoluted.
Yeah.
Well, you know who else did that? What's her name? Anne Hathaway. She took the role of the lead female star of Les Miserables, and she lost something like 60 pounds. I mean, she looks absolutely horrible, but she's supposed to for that role. She is supposed to look very, I don't know. She's supposed to look totally anemic, starved. I mean, I saw pictures of her. Did you see them at all, Robert? The pictures of her when she mm-hmm. was doing this movie, Les Miserables. She went. She lost something like 60 pounds. She looked like she was absolutely starving. Her face was all drawn. She looked the worst I've ever seen her look. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, Charlene Thorne's another actress that did something similar, had her face all, you know, look real messed up and bad for a role she did, too. Yeah.
Oh, Anne Hathaway looks absolutely horrendous. I mean, she's perfect for the role she's playing, but my God, to see her, you would think that she was on a death's door. She was at death's door. I mean, looks absolutely horrible.
And another one's Daniel J. Lewis. And you remember Daniel J. Lewis, he really gets into his role.
Yes, he does.
After he gets done with the role, it takes him about, I think he said, 3 to 4 months to shake off the role,
mm-hmm.
the character he's portraying. Yeah. So, yeah, he really, really gets into his role.
Robert, the director was a guy by the name of Brett Anderson.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that correction. I wasn't for sure if Nolan did that one or not. For The Machinist, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis, he totally became his characters. As a matter of fact, for Gangs of New York, I mean, he became Bill the Butcher. He became Bill the Butcher, and he was absolutely tremendous in that role. That was on the best
movie
ever.
That's a good
movie.
I enjoyed that.
Oh,
it's long.
God.
Way long.
It's long,
but,
very long, but it is absolutely fantastic, and you can't take your eyes off of Daniel Day-Lewis throughout that movie. He commands every scene. He's just unbelievable. Leo DiCaprio, Leonardo, wasn't him yet. Leonardo DiCaprio was fabulous, but Daniel Day-Lewis, he completely commanded that movie. He took it over, and, oh, my God, it's just absolutely
wonderful.
Well,
for some people who don't know, it's about the gangs of New York starting out in the 1800s where
in the Four Points,
the immigrants come over to New York, and then they start forming gangs. Yeah,
Five Points. Was it Five Points?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was absolutely a fabulous movie. It's one of the best I've ever seen. Yeah. Okay.
Liam Neeson played his father in
his
that.
His father,
so,
who was in it for what, about 15 minutes, 10 minutes? Yeah.
Something like that. He was
Liam
like
Neeson
a minister,
got 10
so.
Minutes, yeah. It was a great
and
actor.
And the last thing
also.
I want to bring up is The Loner. It was a series that unfortunately only ran for one season. And it ran 65 to 66. It was created by Ross Serling. And it starred Lloyd Bridges, who played William Cotton, an ex-Union cavalry officer. It ran for 26 episodes before its cancellation. And I have a clip of William Self and Mike Dunn talking about the idea for The Loner.
Ron had told me about a Western that he wanted to do that was called The Loner. Thinking Man's Western. CBS bought it, thinking it was going to be much more of a traditional Western than it was. And I think that from day one, we had a problem with the network. They didn't feel we were delivering what we sold them. And we thought we were. They just didn't understand what we were selling, I guess. And it became a very serious problem with CBS. They wanted more action, more violence.
I didn't define action as 7 bullet holes and 9 people. I really just wanted them to, I guess, ride around a lot more and save a lot more people or jump over a lot more houses and trees. But he said to me, you don't need any action in it. You just need characters you believe in and identify with. Rod always went to the press. He was probably, in the history of television, one of the most outspoken critics of the industry he was in. He never missed the opportunity to point out our weaknesses.
I'm sure Rod was very hurt by the cancellation. It was his old network. Wasn't given a fair shot in his judgment and in mine. It was very hard for Rod. The critics were against him and his network was against him.
So, and that's the unfortunate exit for The Loner. But, yeah, that's pretty much, I had to dig to find those interviews. But Hopefully, there are some clips on YouTube. Hopefully, like, I'll be able to find and actually watch a whole episode when I get a chance just to see what it was like. But I give this 1 out of 5, reluctant 1, and for pretty much the time travel aspect of it. Here again, we don't have no, you know, car, no watch, no boots, no nothing. You just all of a sudden you're back in the old West, kind of, you know, like back there in some of the other episodes. So I'll pass this on to Bobby.
Oh, thank you very much. You two have gone so far afield of this episode, I forgot what we were talking about, but I can understand that. There's absolutely nothing to say about it. Rather than discuss the episode, I'd rather talk about some of the things that Lynn mentioned, and one of them is this business about, and we've talked about this before, is this business about Rod Serling going into comedy, westerns, and all kinds of things that he was not particularly good at. And that really is unfortunate. When I was a child, my mother said to me, she suggested that I pick out one thing to really be good at and stick to it and be the best at it, and maybe I'd be a rich man one day. Unfortunately, I didn't take her advice, so I'm not a rich man today, but it's still good advice, and he should have taken it. Because I wouldn't mind so much if he had gone into westerns and comedy and things like that. The problem is he didn't do it very well. That's the problem with it. I don't need science fiction stories every week. I don't need outer space and spacemen and monsters and things like that. But if you're going to do it, at least make it interesting. And he really didn't, and that's the problem with that. So every time he does that, you know, it's very glaring. The other thing is that, and this is one of those things about any series that is a classic or is considered to be a classic, you always expect it to be good every week. People get that way right away. So if you find a series you really like and you see a certain number of episodes that stick with you, you have the idea that it's always going to be this way. And then when it's not, you get really, really disappointed. That's the bad side about creating anything that's really excellent and having people love it. It's the same in sports or anything. If you have a good year in baseball or in football, and then the next year you just have an average year, people want to know what happened to you. Why didn't you do this every year? Of course, it's unreasonable. It's absurd to expect such a thing. And the same thing is true here, but it really is glaring in this series. And sometimes if I tell anybody about The Twilight Zone who was born many years afterwards and maybe isn't familiar with it, and I say, well, look, you know, it's on TV right now. You got to watch it. You don't know what you're missing. I always worry that they're going to run into one of these lousy episodes and say, what the hell is he talking about? This is awful. And that's one of the problems with it. And this is another one of those really ridiculous episodes. Actually, I hate to admit this, but in the first 5 minutes, I was rather interested. I watched it last night for the first time in a long time. I don't even remember the last time I saw it. And I thought, well, you know what, it's a little intriguing when it first begins, where it's going to go. But like the other bad ones, it simply completely falls apart. It just goes absolutely nowhere. And it seems like the longest 23 minutes in the history of TV. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. And it's simply boring. And that's the trouble with it. And it's just kind of sad to see that kind of thing happen. But listen, if I was a writer and I did as many things as Rod Serling did for this series, I would say to people, what do you expect from me? You have to come up with a classic every week? I mean, that's not easy to do. So I kind of give them a pass on that. What I don't like in the series is when we have these spells where there's like two or three in a row that are substandard. That really gets me down. I don't mind so much if there's a bad one every now and then you get a classic, and I go, all right, we'll forget about that. And we've got To Serve Man coming up in a few shows, and that, of course, is a fabulous episode. So it almost cancels out all the bad that came before it. But this is just absolutely awful. Now, like I do before every show, I went to IMDb. I was in a hurry today. I didn't get the chance to read the reviews there. But the people there gave it a 6.5 out of 10. It's an old story. I mean, no matter how bad it is, they always give it a better-than-average rating. And I'm sure there must be reviews there which people are praising it as the funniest thing they've ever seen and the best episode of the series. It's just ridiculous. And you got to wonder, you know, what they're thinking. Yeah, I agree that A Nice Place to Visit was one of my favorite episodes, and it really is appalling to see him back again in a piece of junk like this. I don't know what to say about it. I just didn't like it, and I gave it a 0, and I wish I could give it a 1 like Robert did, but I can't think of anything I liked about it, so I'll stick with the 0. I know I've said this before in other bad episodes, but I say this again. The most interesting part for me was at the very end of the episode when Rod Serling gives his final comments, and afterwards he has to give a cigarette commercial. I mean, that's the most appalling thing of all. To sit here and watch this man with a cigarette, well, he always had a cigarette between his fingers, to sit and watch him promote something that would ultimately lead to his death is really appalling. It's really amazing to see that. And it's a historical comment. When you watch these episodes and you see these little commercials for cigarettes, it's interesting to look at because you don't see that on TV anymore. And that's the fascinating part about it. It seems so incredibly out of place.
Well, unfortunately,
you know what was...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say what was interesting is they showed at the end, I did catch the closing of the Loner, and they actually showed the product on the screen as the credits were on, you know, Marlboro cigarettes and whatever else.
Yeah, they used to do that all the time, and they didn't care whether they were selling things to kids or whatever. They didn't really mind. I was very young when the Twilight Zone first came on. I was 12 years old. And I, as I've told Lynn in the past, I had an older brother who used to send me to the drugstore to buy cigarettes for him, and he would give me money for candy. And I could go in the drugstore, and indeed I did, at the age of, even younger than that, at the age of 8 and 9, and ask across the counter for a carton of cigarettes, and they would hand it right to me. I mean, it's unbelievable. Nobody cared whether I was the one smoking or not. They simply sold it to me, and I took it back to him. I never smoked a cigarette in my life, so I never had any interest in it. But, you know, it's just kind of, it's kind of sad. Every time I see that at the end of the Twilight Zone episode, I feel like screaming at the screen, Rod, don't do this. You have a bad heart.
Unfortunately, back then, they didn't know what they did back do now. I mean, you didn't have the warnings on the cigarette packages and,
cigarettes weren't harmful. Do you really want an 8-year-old kid smoking? I mean, honestly?
No, of course not. But I'm saying back in 1961, 59, you didn't have the Surgeon General warning you about anything. I mean, back then, smoking was the thing to do. Every show that you watched, Dick Van Dyke smoked.
Oh, absolutely.
Lucy smoked. Desi smoked. Lucy and Ricky smoked all the time on I Love Lucy. Dick Van Dyke smoked. They all smoked.
Peter Gunn, all of them, yeah.
Peter Gunn, everybody, everyone. It's gun smoke. I mean, nobody cared because back then you didn't have the warnings on the labels. And nobody said, smoking is going to kill you. Okay, you had to have common sense to say, it's not the most...
You couldn't have a TV detective who didn't smoke because that was part of his image.
Right. I mean, Columbo smoked. Didn't Columbo smoke? Am I wrong about that?
That I don't know. I'm not sure.
I think he did.
Yeah. Most of them did.
Yeah, but, they didn't have all those warnings back then, and that was the thing to do. And so it was cool.
Dan August, portrayed by Burt Reynolds, he smoked too, so.
They all did. It was cool back then. You didn't have the warnings, and no one knew that it was going to kill you.
Yeah, it's just kind of sad to see that at the episode, but that's the only thing that woke me up. The rest of it put me to sleep, and it's just another zero, and all I can say is stay away from comedy because, not because there is a place for it. You know, I think that what I've read with people who are successful writing one thing or doing one thing, they always say, I got tired of doing that. I wanted to try something else. It's boring for me to write the same kind of stories over and over and over again. Let me do a little comedy. Let me do this. Let me do that. Fine. Be good at it. Find out if you're good at it first and then do it. He was not good at it, and I haven't liked any episode of this series that has gone away from the basics. I have not enjoyed, and it's just another case of that. So I'll simply stick with zero. All right, Lynn, back to you.
Okay, well, I was just going to say that basically everybody back then, even back during I Love Lucy and Twilight Zone, Dick Van Dyke, all these shows, these people weren't idiots. I mean, they had to know that sucking smoke into your lungs, of course, it can't be the healthiest thing in the world, but there were no warnings back then. Nobody said, if you keep doing this,
nobody ever said it wasn't healthy, and that they didn't think it wasn't healthy.
Exactly.
And
I mean,
they did it. How could you possibly believe that putting smoke in your lungs is healthy? If you were in the middle of a fire, would you weave the smoke in from the fire? It's preposterous. It's ludicrous.
Cowboys did it clear back in the 1800s. They used to roll their own. Imagine them smoking without any filters.
Indians did it all the time.
Yeah, and the Marlboro Man. I mean, the Marlboro Man, he was like the ultimate man there, the Marlboro Man on that horse. I mean, hey, if you smoke, you're going to look like this guy. You know, you had no clue. You had no clue because nothing looked bad about him. Nothing looked wrong about the Marlboro guy, and he's smoking all over the place.
It's tough to stop when you've been smoking for years. My mother and my sister smoked for years and years and years, and they stopped smoking the very day that the Surgeon General's report came out. That was the day they stopped right then and there.
There are very few people can do that, though. Very few people can just put them down to that's it. I mean, it's hard to quit smoking. I mean, I did smoke for a short time. You know, a few years ago, I smoked for probably about 4 years. And it's very hard. And I did quit. And I had to use one of those smoking things, you know, the Nicorette. You know, and I used it, and it worked. It worked, but it's hard. You can't just put your sister and mother were very lucky because you can't just put your cigarettes down and say, "That's it, I'm not gonna smoke again." Because it's very hard to do that.
They did it. That's all I know.
Yeah, God bless them, because I'll tell you, it's hard. So, Rick, what's up?
Well, I've said this many times before, and everybody has so far this episode, so I guess I won't say it again. Rod, get some comedy writers. Anyway.
Yeah, there's a good
idea.
Well,
he did try Western, so it's not comedy, but he did try Western. Anyway.
Most of the stuff, believe it or not, like the stuff you saw, like all the background people running around hold on, we got to cut and get the stunt person and all that was actually very true. Stuff like that goes on the set all the time. And it was very well portrayed, I thought. Other than that, the story, the acting was all right. You guys were making fun of Jesse James being dressed up with the outrageous suit and the shirt and what. He was an agent. What do you want?
Well, they all dressed like that, didn't they? For that time,
the agent
period.
Has to identify himself like security on Star Trek had to, you know, show themselves with red shirts. Agents have to stand out too.
They have to look garish. They have to look very garish.
To mix series, okay. Anybody remember?
I don't know. You have to come up with the title, or I won't know.
Yeah, was it Starsky and Hutch with Huggy Bear?
Starsky and Hutch.
Huggy Bear, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With that nice car. Oh, man, love that car.
That's the way pimps always dress in the city.
Pimps and agents, right. They'd swap clothes, you know.
Okay.
Isn't there a store where you can go buy pimp and agent clothes somewhere?
I think that might be somewhere. Who knows?
Yeah,
the pimp shop.
Pimp
and
hoods.
Shop.
You walk into pimp and hoods.
Pimps are us.
Pimp me up.
Agents are us.
But
I remember the movie Superfly. That was pretty good.
Oh,
Superfly.
Yeah.
Hey, that was a good
suit.
The purple suit. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've been trying to get Bobby a purple suit, but he won't let me do it.
I don't know, though. I'd give it a little higher than you guys. I'll give it a 2.
Really? Wow.
Really? Wow. Oh,
wow.
Rick, man, you are a generous man. Oh, this man is generous. Seriously.
You know what I always wanted? I wanted the white suit that Sonny Crockett wore in Miami
Vice.
Oh,
yeah.
I actually had the jacket. I had a blue. It was in blue. So it was kind of cool.
Oh, the leisure suit?
Like white. Yeah.
You talking about Miami Vice?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Miami Vice, yeah.
The white shoes.
They cool. Dressed cool. Yeah, that was the 70s. So they were dressed in late 70s, 80s. Early 80s. Yeah, early 80s.
80s, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they dressed very cool.
Disco time. The disco era. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, Barbara Summers and all that stuff.
Donna Summers, yeah.
Barbara Summers.
Who the hell is Barbara Summers?
Maybe I'm thinking about Barbara Walters. Barbara Walters and Donna.
Oh, yeah, she was a disco queen. Yeah, that's her.
All right, Donna Summers. And Gloria Gaynor. I got that one right. I Will Survive. Remember that
Survive,
one?
Yeah.
Gloria Gaynor. Okay, I got that one right. Meh. Okay.
My favorite was the Bee Gees. I liked it, especially Saturday Night Fever movie was excellent.
Love
John Travolta.
Jeez, we just watched that movie again the other night for like what the 50th time this year. We every time it comes on, we end up watching. Yeah, but that was a great movie. That was good.
Staying Alive wasn't as good where the sequel.
No, that was horrible. Some of these remakes are the worst. Why do they even do it, Felix? Are you there?
He had audio problems, but he did leave his rating.
Bummer. Oh, 0.5. Even give it a half rating.
That's what I would have loved to give it. Yeah, but
0.5. When did we create that?
Yeah, half a rating. Well, that's because Felix adds his own rating system.
Is that a little bit better than crap or what? What is that?
It just went up from zero.
Half a diamond that didn't quite make it out of the rough.
Yeah, you got it. Yes.
It just sunk deeper.
Oh, man. Well, I'm sorry that Dave wasn't here today.
It could be Doctor Who is starting up today. We're supposed to be getting it here pretty shortly. I don't think it aired yet on BBC America, but over there, that's the big thing over in Britain's Doctor Who. And Rick,
yeah.
I think, isn't it 5 episodes? Then they're going to take a break, run the Christmas special, and then the rest in 2013?
Yeah, basically, that's what's going to happen. You're going to be, I don't know how you guys think of the Ponds, but you're going to be subjected or extended the first 5 episodes of this series, and then you get the new companion.
Yeah, I watched The Pond Life, which was a series of internet webisodes that were only like about a minute long, if anything. But The Asylum of the Daleks is the premiere for tonight.
So that's what you think Dave's involved with right now?
Could be, yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
we're
listen.
Talk about it tomorrow.
This is the absolute last time I'm going to ask for this, and I promise I will put it somewhere where I won't lose it. Can you please give me the ID number for Dave's wine show? I have asked for this 4 times now. I know that. This time, I am putting it on my computer in a file, and I won't lose it. I always write it on a piece of paper, and then the piece of paper gets lost. Do you have his wine show ID?
Well, let me check. Unless
I really hate
this.
I keep losing it. Because I do this every time we do a show. I said, give me the, and I put it on a piece of paper, and the piece of paper is on my desk. It moves around, and then it gets lost. This time, immediately after the show, I'm putting it in my computer. I know
Big
he has.
Prudy is, I think, is the name of it, but.
Okay. And so the way.
Being slow today, unfortunately.
Because I think I tried to go in at one point, and I just tried to look it up by his name, but that, you can't do that. It either has to be the ID or the name of the show. So I have no idea what it is, but I really would like to listen to that one night or one day whenever he has it on.
That's what I'm looking for here.
He could be working on his show for tomorrow. He could be...
It's Cultum Collective. Yeah, Cultum Collective.
Yeah.
True too. Yeah, I wonder who's got a plan for that. Oh, and by the way, 2 weeks from now, We are going to be doing, okay, Robert, which are we going to be doing 2 weeks
actually,
from now?
Actually, excellent episode, far better than what we were presented. Yeah, definitely.
Kick the can, yes.
And
that
this is the
going...
original Kick the Can, not
oh,
the
God.
Twilight Zone the
movie
version.
Version
of
this is the one with Ernest Truex, who I absolutely adore. I adore Ernest Truex. So we will be doing that on September 15th, Saturday, September 15th, at this time. And it will be Kick the Can with Ernest Truex, and he's just absolutely a joy to watch.
Damn.
Okay,
what?
Here it is.
I might be at a college football game.
Rick, what you can do is send me an MP3 like Dave did when he was having problems, and then I can air the MP3 for you on the show.
All right.
If you want to do that. Yeah, just send it to my email address, and I'll type it up here real quick in the chat for you. His show ID, you got your pen and paper ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is 112272. That is
one,
big
one.
And fruity.
Big and fruity?
Yeah, and he's talking about corks. It's supposed to be episode 54. It's
about
on
corks.
September the 4th. Well, they hold your wine in, you know, to preserve it.
Yes,
yeah,
there's corks and stoppers and all kinds of things. Yeah. Okay, 112272.
Yeah, it's on at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's 9-4, September 4th, 20 years.
Yes, I want to be there for that. All right. Anyway, and Rick, you have to be here. Yeah, I've got to cancel the football games. I'm sorry.
No.
Oh, come on, Rick. I need to talk to Daphne. I mean, this is just – well, can Daphne take your place?
If she suddenly grows thumbs and can speak something other than Doggagal, as I call
okay,
it.
What you do, Rick, is you get a cursed collar from Friday the 13th, put it on somebody and have them change it to a dog. There you go.
There you go. You got 2 weeks to teach her. Come on, Rick. Let's not be lazy here. Teach the dog. All right, guys. Well,
yeah,
you
don't
want to
do that. We'd rather kick the can than kick the dog. I don't think we want to do that.
Don't you kick those dogs. You kick a dog and you'll get my foot up your butt. Okay. All right. Well, my darling friend.
And that is when?
September 15th.
I don't have my calendar. Okay.
September 15th.
Just let people know.
Today's what, the first? Yes, it's September 15th. And that's Kick the Can with the wonderfully delightful Eric Truex. And I'm looking very forward to that. So we will see all of you then. And it's Labor Day weekend, so everyone have a fabulous weekend, no matter what you're doing or not doing. Just have a good time not doing it or doing it. Okay?
Rolling. So now we hit that dusty trail as we
hit
go
that
on
dusty
now.
Trail. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, all.